I'm most grateful for being here. I think this is a long view conversation between global historians, historians of capitalism, and economic historians. I think stopping calling names to each other and engaging in a conversation would be very helpful. So here we are. This panel is about the timing and causality 20 years later. So I'm going to focus on the timing of the Great Diversion and trying to provide a new look. So let me start as you know, it's, well, some of you know I have a perfect English accent, but I use this accent for the sake of exotism. So I'm trying to capture your attention. And one of the things I do is to look words up in the dictionary, try not to make a mistake. So I was looking at divergence meaning, and there are two meanings: drawing apart and deviation from a course or standard. But this matters because there are therefore two ways of measuring divergence. One is looking at the gap, whether there is an increasing gap in, say, Eurasia between Europe and Asia, or whether there is increasing dispersion in average incomes within Eurasia. And I'm going to use these two concepts. All of us, including economic historians, are very skeptical about the data we use. Actually, as Gareth would say, there is no data, not in strictly speaking, but there are some quantitative conjectures, if you like. So there are two ways of providing quantitative indicators. One is wages, and the other one is output per head. And here I'm listing the shortcomings. I'm not going to go into that. But obviously, wages are the returns to only one factor of production, labor, whereas output per head covers all of them. But any of them have serious problems. So we have to take what I'm going to say with a grain of salt, but I'm going to focus on output per head. Okay. Now we go to the debate. I was telling you that there are two ways of approaching the divergence. One's through an increasing income gap between Europe and Asia, or looking at the dispersion. But in fact, the debate so far focuses just on the first one, on increasing the income gap, and narrows down the focus not to Europe, but to Britain, or what Jan Louten van Zanden calls the North Sea area, which is Flanders, Holland, and England. And Asia, that I'm calling it Asia 3, because it's basically China, or sometimes the Yangtze Delta, and now, thanks to Vishnu's work, is also India and more Japan. And in terms of looking at the increasing income gap, historians, economic historians, are defining convergence in two ways, one which is more astringent than the other. The first one is the Great Divergence happens when a new path of sustained growth emerged. And obviously in Britain or the North Sea area. Another way of approaching it is when a country, Britain or the North Sea area, achieves higher income levels than ever before by any other region of the world. From, according to the more generous, the more the soft definition, there is a debate. Broadbury and Van Zanden would say everything starts, this divergence starts with the Black Death, and as you know, Pomeranz and Goldstone would say happens after 1800. But if you use the second criteria, then you have this idea that Great Diversion happens when Britain or the North Sea area achieve higher income levels than any other region before. Goldstone would say this is only during the Industrial Revolution. Okay, so I'm going to broaden the focus and looking at three questions. One is, when did the little divergence, which is part of the debate, Steve Robbery has emphasized much, that you have an increasing gap between Asia and Europe, basically Britain and the three Asian countries. And even though Japan grows a lot, but starts from a lower level and grows at a lower pace. So there is this idea of that dispersion within Europe, dispersion within Asia, and a gap, increasing gap between the two regions. So I'm going to look, take a look to what happens in terms of little divergence in, within Asia and Europe. Then I'm going to look at the gap between the two continents plus the contribution of the little divergence. So let me start with Asia. And I apologize to Kaoru and to Vishnu and to all, and obviously to Tirthankar for my boldness. This is real output. This is what people do. Basically, what people researching on divergence, what they do, they look at specific national cases. So here you have three columns of the level of per capita income, if you want it. The blue line is Japan, the orange is India, and the gray is China. So here you can see that there is changes in the relative position. Basically, what you can observe is that there is a period in which China was ahead of the rest before 1700, and after 1800, it is Japan. And in fact, you could say that there is what people call a reversal, a mild reversal of fortune, which means that the richest becomes poorer and the poorer becomes richer. And that happens between 1400 and 1600. And there is a stronger process of reversal of fortune after 1750, basically, when Japan takes over and reverses the relationship between China and Japan. Okay, so this is one finding. If we look at the three countries' population weighted average, so that would be a capture more or less Asia, this kind of, this restricted definition of Asia, what you can see is that the level of income per head remains roughly stable up to 1700, and then there is a decline in which obviously China plays an important role from 1700 to 1850. If you move from the income gap, increasing income gap, into the dispersion, this is what you get. And remember that the higher the columns, the higher the dispersion. So if you, and as you can see, there are two colors here. One is blue and the other one is orange. What do they mean? The blue means it's dispersion, but taking each country as equal to the others, regardless their population size, okay? So this is the usual way economies approach it in the 1990s, the convergence debate. And the reason was that nation states have their own policies, and this is what they were looking at. But if we want to look in terms of what happens within Asia or within any other region in the world, it matters to weight each country's income by population, okay? Because you approach what happens to inhabitants of that region. So here you have basically two stories. There is a story of, believe it or not, convergence. There was convergence between 1400 and 1600. There was convergence in the second part of the 17th century. And there was divergence in the late 17th century, and especially after 1750, okay? And it's very interesting, and I finish with this remark, that when you weight by population, when you look at dispersion of Asian inhabitants' income, the dispersion is much milder than when you just take each country at face value, regardless the population size. So these are basically my what I just said. So I'm going to proceed with the case of Europe. In Europe, we have much more information than ever. So this is, as you can see, obviously, a site test. So remove your glasses, focus on the screen. If you can distinguish the lines, you don't need spectacles. Otherwise, you need to pay a visit to High Street or Broad Street, okay? Or Com Market, actually. So here, these are average income levels in 8 European countries between 1300 and 1870. And there are, I'm going to just to give you the highlights. One is that, unlike Madison's view, European countries were much richer, probably twice, at least twice, the World Bank poverty line, absolute poverty line. The second thing, and in this case, Madison was right, there were changes in leadership as there were in Asia. Here you have Northern Italy, then in the Renaissance, then in the 17th century, the Netherlands, and then later on Britain. But if you think in terms of the previous definitions of convergence, remember in terms of income gap, here there are two interesting things. Britain only overcomes the rest after the 1780s. Even if you add Britain to the Netherlands, the North Sea area only overcomes the rest in the very late 18th century. If you use Goldstone astringent definition of convergence, then you will realize that only in the late 1830s, Britain and the North Sea area would have overcome the level of Renaissance Italy, okay? So this is more pessimistic perception. Second thing is, there is this view that Europe was not perhaps Malthusian anymore. These results that compare in green population and in red per capita income suggest otherwise, suggest that only in the early 17th century, in the late 17th century, in the late 17th century and after 1800, there is simultaneous population growth and per capita income growth, okay? So, which is Kuznetsian definition of growth. And let me just look at the last slide for Europe, which is dispersion. When you look at dispersion, remember again that I'm comparing unweighted and population-weighted dispersion. In dotted blue, you have unweighted population dispersion. In red, you have weighted population dispersion. And you can see that there are three major episodes in the early 15th century, in the early 17th century, in the early 19th century. Whereas in the 14th and in the 16th century, there is convergence. But the important thing is when you weight by population, the little divergence in the early 15th century is much more important than the little divergence in the early 17th and in the early 19th century. So let's add up everything and see what happens when you, these are the results I just told you. Let me just move to the last part of the presentation. So this is what happens if you add up little divergence for Asia and for Europe, plus the gap between Asia and Europe. So you get an assessment of overall divergence in overall divergence in Eurasia. If we use the more intuitive concept, which is the income gap, and this is what people have been using so far, what you find is that whether you use population weights or not, what you can see is that the relative output per head in Asia compared to Europe only declines after 1700. Actually, if you would say that we are comparing Western Europe to Asia, and we would be able to include Russia and Eastern Europe, perhaps this 80% this ratio in which Asia is 4/5 of Europe would erase to some extent. So basically, The divergence measure using an increase in income gap only happens after 1700. For instance, Steve Broadbury has confirmed this finding for the case of China. But this goes against this early divergence that other people have suggested. Secondly, if you use dispersion, the rise in dispersion, this is population weighted, because I'm trying to capture the dispersion within inhabitants of Eurasia, what you find is the following. You find that there are an episode of divergence in the late 17th century. Probably if you use unweighted data, that would increase a little bit. But the great divergence in terms of dispersion of incomes and incomes weighted by population only happens after 1800, or after, if you prefer, after 1800. Okay? So this is, to some extent, a confirmation of Pomerantz and Goldstone views. And then the last slide, what is the contribution of the little divergence in Asia and Europe to the great divergence? Or in other words, to what extent the great divergence is conditioned by the little divergences? And here you have, because I'm using a statistical metric that can be breakdown into within and between inequality, and what you have is that the blue part, this is the whole great divergence, decomposed into two parts. One is the gap between Europe and Asia, and this is the blue part of each column. And then you have yellow and red. The yellow and red are the contribution of the little divergences. In yellow, you have the contribution of Asia. In red, the contribution of Europe's little divergence. And as you can see, in the great period of the great divergence between 1800 and 1870, is basically the increasing gap between Europe and Asia. The conclusions are, firstly, that the income gap is quite stable before 1700, and it might not have existed before 1700. Secondly, is that you have episodes of little divergence, but only coincide in Asia and in Europe in the early 19th century. Actually, there is little divergence in the late 17th and in Europe in the early 17th century, and vice versa. So they probably would cancel each other. The reversal of fortune, which is so often associated to little divergence, they don't match each other all the time. It's basically in Asia in the 19th century, in Europe in the 19th century, plus a bit in the early 17th century. And the timing of divergence, now there are two stories. The most pessimistic is the great divergence only happens after 1800, and this is when you use income dispersion, the increase in income dispersion. But if you use increase in income gap, that would be after 1700. And you can say that the contribution of the little divergence to the great divergence was tiny. And it is the Industrial Revolution what is the main driver of the great divergence. Thank you.